So today we are going to explore two different cryptids. I'm so excited. One perhaps might be a big ass turtle. The other, we're unsure. Can't wait to talk about it and the theories.
He involves slime, though.
That I did not like so much. Hi, welcome to True Creeps, where the stories are true and the creeps are real. We'll cover stories from grotesque gore to the possibly plausible paranormal, to horrifying history, to tense and terrible true crime, and everything else that goes bump in the night. We're your hosts, Amanda,
and I'm Lindsay, and we want you to join us while we creep.
We cover mature topics. Listener discretion is advised.
Hey, everybody. Today, we're talking about some Midwestern cryptids. We've got a Bigfoot-like creature that's been spotted in Illinois. He's a little muddy. And then a massive turtle from Indiana.
I'm stoked about the turtle.
Same. As always, we're going to post pictures of different things that exist with these cryptids. But there's a statue that, like, just for each of these, by the way, that you need to just behold. Just 10 out of 10.
We love a good statue.
I do. Just love a good statue. Especially of a cryptid. 10 out of 10.
Mm-hmm. There should be more cryptid statues.
I feel like most towns that embrace their cryptids have a statue. Mothman's got his little booty.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And they try to put things balanced between the cheeks.
They try, but they don't succeed. So let's just get right on into it with the Beast of Busco. He looks like a really big fucking turtle.
I love it. A big ass turtle.
Yeah. Specifically a snapping turtle. There's a big difference because when I think of a box turtle, they've got kind eyes. And a snapping turtle hates you and everyone you've ever known. Even if you're saving them, from the road. I love all turtles. Agreed. We'll get into the sightings in a moment. But the Beast of Busco shell has said to be 15 feet wide. And in case you're wondering, that's 3.63 12-year-old boys. Otherwise, like, how would you understand?
Exactly.
Yeah. And then people say that shell has also been described as being as big as a car. I feel like that's a better visual than, like, just 15 feet wide or 3.63 12-year-old boys.
No.
I feel like a car.
What kind of car? Is it a smart car?
In my head, it was a Volkswagen Beetle. I don't know. I think because it's round, maybe.
Okay. It looks like a turtle already.
Yeah. It's like pre-turtled.
Okay.
But they didn't specify which car. But they also said that its neck was as thick as a stovepipe.
What the fuck?
You know.
Okay.
As one knows what a stovepipe is. So we're going to talk about two time periods of sightings. The first one's going to be substantially shorter. And it's the original sighting in 1898 by Oscar Falk. He said that he saw a giant turtle in the lake on his property. Now, this lake is 7 acres large, which is 126,720 12-year-old boys. So it's like just 20 middle schools.
Oh, now we're doing in middle schools. How big is the average middle school?
I don't know.
Too many. Are we measuring things by middle school now?
That should be our large. You know how you've got like inch and a foot and then you've got a mile? Yeah,
or a middle school.
Yeah, like you reach a certain point where like it's just not practical to measure it in 12-year-old boys. You have to measure it in middle schools. But anyway, Oscar Falk has this sighting and then we don't hear much about him. As just an interesting note, that lake is named Falk Lake after Oscar Falk.
Who would have known?
What a wild notion. I also like the idea of having your own property and then naming things on it after yourself. Presumably he named it. He's like, my name's Oscar Falk, so this is Falk Lake.
I need to get a lake.
Now, let's just fast forward a few years to 1948, when Charlie Wilson and Ora Blue went fishing at Falk Lake. Falk Lake was on private property, and it was owned by Gail Harris. So while they're on the lake fishing, they see a huge turtle and they tell Gail about it. There just happens to be a turtle expert in the area named Rusty Reed. And he's like, that was a hoax. They never saw it. This is kind of bolstered by the fact that Charlie was also known to exaggerate a bit. It wouldn't have been too out of character for him to be like, I saw this massive, crazy ass turtle.
But why is that the thing that the talk of the town? They're just like, you know what? I saw a turtle today.
No, a big turtle, like a big fucking turtle. You've got to go big or go home.
Turtle the size of a Volkswagen Beagle.
And if you don't know what Amanda's talking about, you have to listen to the end of the episode because that's where you know all the deets and hot goss. There's apparently not a lot of news going on in Trebusco, which is why the local newspaper still runs a story on this massive fucking turtle.
I love that. I want that news cycle here.
Honestly, right? Gail is pretty skeptical. I've also seen some reports that either Aura or Charlie or both were his brothers-in-law. So, like,
okay,
I could also absolutely see that type of, like, ribbing of, we saw a massive turtle on your property, you should go find it. Especially when we get to, like, what happens later. It seems like this would be a prank that they would play on him because his response is so big eventually. But we'll get there.
Yeah.
Gail is skeptical, reasonably. But then he sees the turtle. And this is in March of 1949. And the first sighting took place. Gail and his friend, Reverend Orville Reese, saw the creature when they were repairing Gail's barn roof. They see this big-ass fucking turtle. They skitter off the roof. They get into a rowboat. And then they start looking for the creature in the water. If I saw a massive creature in a lake, I wouldn't be like, I should go see about it. Like, I should go be close to it. That's not my first reaction.
I should be stuck in the middle of the lake with it.
I should go get in its business. Like, that just seems like a bad idea. Then they see the creature again the next day. People in town are like, Gail, you got to get that fucking turtle. We don't know why they had to capture it, but it always does feel like when we're talking about cryptids that people are like, we got to catch it. Like, we got to catch them all. Like, every single fucking cryptid. They yearn.
They were just very avid turtle catchers.
Oh, shit.
And they just loved turtles.
I have a feeling that they weren't going to do anything good once they got that turtle, though.
Were they going to milk them?
Are they going to milk them?
From the Ninja Turtles.
I know what you're talking about, but now I'm just picturing turtles with nipples.
I don't know. Talk to the Ninja Turtles about this.
We didn't make it up. So Gail's like, you know what? You're fucking right. I am going to try to catch this big turtle. And he sets up this like contraption of and like trap of chicken wire that's staked down. This chicken wire is like 10 feet in the water, though. He has truly rigged this in a very bizarre way. And it captures the creature, but it thrashes around. It's too strong and it's able to just break free of the chicken wire. And that trap doesn't work again.
That's fair. We have a tortoise and we have chicken wire over her enclosure and she has two broken through it. It was mainly to keep like coyotes and stuff out, but
I understand.
No. Anyways, so on March 7th of the same year, a Columbus City newspaper ran a story of the Beast of Busco, which drew reporters from Fort Wayne the next day. Cliff Milner, who was a reporter for a Fort Wayne newspaper, named the turtle Oscar and coined the name the Beast of Busco.
I love that.
Oscar just sounds so chill, you know?
Yeah, I mean,
he's just a turtle.
Also, I love that Oscar Falk is getting, he has a lake named after him and the cryptid that's in that lake. Twofer.
Yeah. Lots of articles were poking fun at the sightings, so Gail got pretty upset. He felt like his reputation was being questioned, so Gail became more committed to capturing Oscar. The search on March 12th had over 200 spectators that had come to Gail's farm to watch as Gail tried to capture Oscar. So he's like, you'll all see. I'll get this turtle.
I just can't stress enough how much of a cartoon Gail becomes trying to capture this turtle. Like, think Wile E. Coyote and the Roadrunner.
Yeah.
Is so how I see this. And I also just love the idea of, what are you doing tomorrow? Oh, I'm headed over to Churubusco. I'm going to go watch a guy try to catch a big turtle. You in? And I'm like, you bet your ass.
I mean, that
I
sounds
am.
Like a great Saturday,
yeah,
to me.
I mean, done and done.
So the next day, there were much more people. There was gridlock traffic in Churubusco on the route to Gail's farm. So everyone's like, hell yeah, we're going to see this turtle.
Yeah.
There was also small planes with people trying to capture a glimpse of Oscar, which, like, that kind of makes sense. Like, I feel like you'd be able to see it from further up in the lake because it should be big.
A lake that is over 127,000 12-year-old boys big, that's a big fucking lake, you know?
It is. How many middle schools would you say, though?
I'd say at least five. 5 to 10 middle schools. Did you like how smooth that was, though?
That was good.
I was so proud of myself for that just, like, coming out very straight-faced. In all seriousness, though, that's a really big fucking lake to be, like, just trying to behold where this creature might be in it.
Yeah, yeah. Now, because it was so busy and crazy, Gail tried to have the local police come to direct traffic because it was so busy. He was unsuccessful. It did not work. They were like, sorry, we're not going to direct your turtle traffic today.
I can get that, but also, this is havoc.
So, on March 14th, there were 3,000 people on Gail's farm trying to see Oscar. And not too surprisingly,
This created some chaos. Reporters began to get even more loose with the facts. Ben S. Mano of Elawah, Tennessee, claimed the turtle had escaped from his carnival.
And we looked to see if we could find anything on Ben Mano or his carnival, and we couldn't find really anything about this person. So I'm like, that seems like one of those loose facts that's just in a lot of the articles in history.
Yeah. So Gail's wife, Helen, said that they received an onslaught of letters, and some were not so nice.
I just can't imagine what nasty letter you're writing to a guy who has a big turtle in his lake. What would even be in that letter that would be not nice?
He's creating traffic, perhaps? Oh. I don't know. Like, there's no reason.
Yeah.
But people do get real mad about traffic.
They do. That I could understand. But other than that, I'm like, get over it.
Right. Even his children were involved in the search for Oscar. So it was like a family activity.
Yeah. And with 3,000 people on the property, how would it not be?
That's too many people.
It's too many people. So Gail and his friend, Kenneth Leach, who was a local mechanic, began to design traps to try to capture Oscar. And the way that these traps are designed varies, but the only way I can describe them is cartoon-like, in that they're like completely fresh turtle capturing inventions. Like, they're on the fly just like inventing massive turtle capturing devices.
It sounds like you don't capture enough turtles.
I guess. I don't know. But the way that they were described did not make any type of sense to me, but I can just imagine Gail like in his workshop with his friend. They're like, we're going to catch this fucking turtle today. Today's the day. And they're just like putting just random shit together, hoping for the best. But one of the things that people say that he made, and this is actually in a lot of sources, is that he made a periscope so that he could see deep into the lake. And just an interesting thing about this lake is so that, you know how sometimes you're at a lake and you can like feel the ground and it's like kind of solid? That was not this type of lake. This type of lake had sediment and mud and muck at the bottom. So it was really soft. Once you got close to the floor of the lake, it was really murky. And it was also super fucking deep.
Sounds like my nightmare.
So then we're on March 18th. Gail provided Woodrow Rigsby a complete dive suit. Woodrow attempted to walk along the bottom of the lake to find Oscar. Because they're going to find this fucking 15-foot wide turtle. Can you imagine? You're just like... That's the sound, apparently, of someone walking across the bottom of a lake.
Clearly, a muddy lake.
Do you want to find it? Like, if you're underwater and you can behold it, do you want to see it? I don't think I would want to see it.
And also, what do you do when you see it?
That's
you're underwater
saying.
With the damn thing.
It's looking at you. You're looking at it. I just don't think it's a good idea. I think it's a bad idea all around. So, okay. He gets under the water. He's about to start his walk. Immediately, his helmet starts to leak. And Woodrow's like, I'm out. So then Walter Johnson, another diver, he tries to walk across the bottom of the lake. And he spends 2 hours at the bottom of the lake before he's like, I'm done. Because he kept sinking up to his chest in that like mud and muck at the bottom of the lake and was getting like stuck.
This makes me uncomfortable.
You could not pay me enough to have that happen once, let alone for it to just keep happening. And you're like, but I got to find this big turtle because I got to get stuck down here. No. No. So, okay. Now, we mentioned that Gail, Helen, and the kids are all involved in this adventure, if you will. They've got tons of people on the property, and they are, not quite surprisingly, trampling everything.
That's what groups of people do.
This is a farm, and people are just all over the fucking place, just creating chaos. So they're like, you know what? We're going to sell coffee and hot dogs. And I think that's great. They start that on March 19th. This way they can recoup some of the money that like they're spending not doing farm activities with a property that's also been, you know, messed up. What a mixture. But like coffee, hot dogs, no bathroom. Let's not do it. Let's just not do that. That's a bad idea. So then on March 22nd, a photographer from Life magazine took nearly 300 photos, but none of them included the creature or wherever it ran. So then people are like all in a fucking like tizzy about this turtle. It seems like there must have been a reward of some sort, and or just if you have a massive creature like cryptid, you can sell it in some fashion.
Mm-hmm.
1948, people are like, I'll give you 17 pennies for that massive creature. But two men bought a big ass fucking sea turtle and they were like, it's Oscar. But people were like, no, that's not it. That's not it. They realized
that doesn't live in a lake.
Yeah. They're like, that's a sea turtle.
Poor sea turtles.
But then Gail was like, but you know fucking what? That's a great idea. I should get a lady turtle out here to help lure him out. Like, she'll seduce him with her feminine wiles to come out of wherever he's hiding. Because,
of course,
somehow by seeing, I would imagine, just his shell, because I don't think he was, like, up on top of the lake, like, hands up, like, turtle dick out. Like, I don't know how they presumed that he was a dude. So they bring a lady turtle out. That doesn't work. Shock.
So to sex a turtle, it's their shell? Also, I have a tortoise. It's their tail for them, at least for the type I have, how long their tail is.
Turtle facts with Amanda.
Yeah.
What do you mean? You can tell the sex by the shell?
Yeah. So I already knew my turtle was a male when I got him, so I didn't really look into it too much. But with our tortoise, we had to watch when she got full grown how big her tail was, like if it was long or if it was short. But I believe for turtles, there's like the way that the shell is curved. Sometimes they're claws, too.
Okay, but I think that we can all agree that on a random, very massive turtle that we don't know what type of turtle it is, that we probably wouldn't be seeing it enough to really know.
Maybe the claws. Maybe when he was, like, swimming, you know?
So by May, the media frenzy had died down, but Gale was like, this fucking turtle is not going to make a fool of me, so he keeps searching. He tries setting off dynamite charges at one point. I don't know what he thinks that's going to do. That doesn't make any sense to me. So then he's like, you know what? I've tried to trap it. I'm going to just get rid of the lake. So he begins to drain the lake. And the news is like, I'm intrigued. And he starts coming back out more. And that's when he starts to charge people money to come onto his property. And this is to both offset the cost of the damage to his crops and also to offset the cost of actually draining the lake to like have the machinery and gasoline to do so. We mentioned earlier that lake was over 127,000 boys or 5 to 10 middle schools large. The lowest he ever got it was about from 7 down to 1 acre he was able to drain. And he used 2,000 gallons of gas to do this.
Oh my gosh.
And if you're thinking of like a massive lake like this, the water being in there is creating a structure. And when you pull that out, the surrounding land around this is going to be affected. So trees began to fall over into the lake and even a truck fell in.
Oh my gosh.
I also saw some sources that said a nearby road was affected. It's reported that celebrities and politicians even came out to the lake to try to see Oscar. By mid-September, there was only 12 feet of water remaining in the lake.
That's not much.
Yeah.
Not enough for Oscar.
And if you're thinking too of like how deep that is, keep in mind that one of our divers was chest deep, right? So some of that's also like that mud and muck. So probably not a ton of water at all. On October 13th, there were about 200 spectators when Oscar allegedly popped up to the surface to try to eat a duck that they were using to try to lure Oscar out. And again, I'm just confused on why they thought that Oscar would find a full fucking duck appetizing.
That's random, yeah.
It is. So the pump that was draining the water got clogged with that muddy muck, and this slowed down the draining process drastically. Gale had appendicitis in December, and when he returned to his efforts to draining the lake, that's when he realized that there had been so much rain that it had just about refilled the lake completely. So, like, all of that work for nothing.
I bet Oscar made it rain.
Obviously.
So that's when Gale officially ended his search. His health was declining, and this had a huge fiscal impact. Gale sold his farm, including the lake and the turtle traps, in 1950 to someone from Chicago. There have not been any further searches for Oscar. Now, our favorite part. Let's talk about the theories. Rusty Reed, who we mentioned earlier, thought that Oscar was likely an alligator snapping turtle. And his size had just been exaggerated. And those do look pretty intense.
They are kind of scary. And they look like a Pokemon, if I'm honest. Like, they'd look like a mythical creature.
Their faces alone look terrifying.
Yes, especially if it was a big one.
Mm-hmm. And they do get fairly big, but they are typically found from northern Florida to eastern Texas, but they have been spotted in other states, including Indiana. They very rarely come onto land, except for when they're laying their eggs or they're nesting. Otherwise, they're just kind of chilling in the water. I feel like they're always found like walking across a road, though, to get to lay their eggs or go back to their water.
Yep.
They can stay still and submerged for so long that the algae will start to grow along their shell. They capture their prey in an interesting way. They lay at the bottom of the riverbed or the lakebed, and they just open their mouth. And then they wiggle their tongue around like a worm, and fish try to capture the worm, and then the turtle eats them.
So with that in mind, I want you to picture, say this is as big as everyone says. It's massive. It is laying on the bottom of the lake, and you are that guy walking in that fucking diver suit, and you just walk straight into its fucking mouth. Absolutely not.
No, no, that's what he was hoping for. That was his plan all along. So they also can taste chemicals in water that are released by certain species of fish. So even if their prey is hiding in the mud or the muck, they will find them. And they typically live for 11 to 45 years, but some captive alligator snapping turtles have lived to be 70 years old.
Damn.
I love that. So they typically weigh from about 155 pounds to 170 pounds, which is about 1.76 to 1.91 12-year-old boys. But how many middle schools?
It's too small to measure in middle schools.
There's reports of a 400-pound one in Kansas in 1937, but it isn't super credible.
It's really
That's
not.
Too big. Some people think that with all the attention, Oscar fled from the lake. Either when people weren't near the lake, or through an underground tunnel or channel, perhaps. This is unlikely, though, because the bottom of the lake had so much mud and, like, yuck. They never found one, at least. Now, Churubusco is known as Turtle Town, USA, and they have fully embraced their cryptid. There's turtles everywhere and statues. I love that for them.
I just love this fucking turtle. He's just straight chilling.
And, like, when you think of, like, the Mothman statue, think of the opposite of that.
Oh, yeah, yeah. The Mothman statue is, they're sexualizing the Mothman, abso-fucking-lutely, versus the Beast of Busco, Oscar, looks like he is a child reading challenge for the summer mascot.
Yeah, that's perfect.
We had Sneaks the Cat here. Like, that's what he looks like. He looks like he would be outside of a library. Like, he is that much of a chill little gentleman.
I think so. I agree. That's perfect. That's a perfect explanation of what he looks like.
Thanks.
He looks like Franklin, kinda.
Yeah, he really does.
So the property with Falk Lake was up for sale again in 2021, but we couldn't find whether it was bought or not. Perhaps they're just harboring this turtle.
Yeah, maybe Oscar bought it, you know?
Oh, yeah. If he can make it rain.
Classic Oscar. What can he do?
He can figure out how to buy a property.
Yeah, yeah. So our next cryptid for today is the Big Muddy Monster from Murfreesboro, Illinois. Now, we're going to talk a lot about how he looks as we talk about the sightings, but he's thought to be at least 7 feet tall, typically covered in mud, with hair that is white, cream, or silvery. He has glowing eyes, surprisingly fluid movements. He's bipedal, and some have described him as otherworldly.
I love that.
I love this as well, because I love the idea of being, like, gliding and otherworldly and, like, effervescent, but just fucking covered in mud. One of my favorite things about this research and about this cryptid generally is that the Murfreesboro Police Department has their case files on all of the sightings available online. So the reports of the sightings that we're going to talk about, with the exception for the very, very last one, are all from the actual police department's case files that were typed up on a typewriter. So we can look through all of them just as they were written and just chef's kiss, because you normally can't find primary sources like this when you're looking for cryptid stuff. And just another cherry on top of how this particular area really embraced their cryptid, because they're like, we like this so much that we want you to know how we investigated it when we first heard about it. So let's get into those sightings. So the first account was on June 25th of 1973. And this was a police report for 644 North 9th Street. We're going to call the Murfreesboro Police Department the MPD because, frankly, it's just easier to say. So that's what that means. So the call to the MPD was around 11:55 p.m. And it was from Randy Needham. And he was calling to report his sighting. He said that he saw the creature in a wooded area north of the Big Muddy River, a.k.a. Big Muddy Monster. First sighting, Big Muddy Monster. And so he said that it was next to the boat ramp area. He said that he and the person who he was with were on the south side of the parking area that was next to the woods. An interesting place to be at 11:55 p.m., but you know, you do you. Needham was in his car when he heard loud screaming in the wooded area, and then he saw a creature that was about 7 feet tall. He said that it had light hair that was matted with mud and that it started to approach his car. Not too surprisingly, he left. Now, he was with a woman named Judy Johnson, and both Needham and Judy were married to separate people. An important note, they did not want people to know that they were out together, from my understanding. So,
okay.
I think that just makes the story a little bit more credible, because if you have a vested interest in people not knowing that you are with someone other than your spouse at 11:55 p.m. in a random park parking lot, you don't have anything to gain here. It's only bad for you for this to come out. But I digress. So Judy also gave her side of this. She said that she was in the car, but she didn't see the creature. She just heard the scream. Both Needham and Judy said that the sound the creature made was inhuman.
No, thank you.
Yeah, yeah. So officers Nash and Lindsay got to the area and they searched, but they couldn't find the creature. They did, however, find several impressions that were about 3 to 4 inches deep and 10 to 12 inches long and about 3 inches wide. That sounds like it could be a human footprint, because I feel like 10 to 12 inches long, you know, that's not too big.
Yeah.
So Needham, officers Nash and Lindsay, and Deputy Scott then came back to the area at 2 a.m. and they were like, we've got boots on and we're ready to look for this fucking creature. So they go, they find more impressions like the ones they had seen earlier, but these were deeper in the mud and they didn't seem as long as the other ones they had found. And they're like, fuck, we don't have a camera. So Officer Lindsay leaves to go get a camera so he can take a picture of the prints. One of the reasons they want to take pictures of them is because the way they are positioned is super bizarre. No two prints were the same distance apart. Some were right next to each other, while others were like 5 to 6 feet apart. It wasn't as though it was a natural stride. And it didn't look like Fair. The ones that were further apart were like deeper, like from a jump.
Yeah.
So while Officer Lindsay is getting that camera, the rest of them are following the prints that are in the mud to the river's edge. So they're leaning down, looking at these tracks, when Needham, Officer Nash, and Deputy Scott hear a loud, shrill scream that came from the wooded area that's southeast near the river. And it's only about 100 yards from where they're standing. And Needham is like, that's what I heard earlier. So they all run back to the squad car. Now, by this time, Officer Lindsay is coming back and they tell him what had happened. And that's when they call Sergeant Titchener to come and photograph the tracks. Because they're like, no, you come here, you take the photos.
I'm not.
And they continue their search, but they do so in their squad cars. They don't want to be out in the woods searching themselves. They want to be inside their cars with the spotlights. So once Sergeant Titchener photographs those prints, they all get the hell out.
They're like, this isn't worth anything. No.
Exactly.
Fair. So let's talk about another report. This one happened on June 26th of 1973, and it was for 37 Westwood Lane. So on that day, MPD received a call from Mrs. Harry Ray reporting that her daughter and her daughter's boyfriend saw a large creature in the field behind the Ray family home. And it's interesting that they just call her Mrs. Harry Ray, like she doesn't have a name. Mm-hmm. She's just owned, apparently. Anyways, so the daughter was Cheryl, and Cheryl's boyfriend, his name was Randy E. Kreith. Officers Nash and Manwaring came to the Ray family home to talk to Cheryl and Randy. They gave the MPD the following account. They were sitting on the patio, chatting, when they saw something moving around a small patch of trees in the field that was behind the home. They saw it walk out of the trees, near the edge of the yard, then it turned around and it walked right back into the field. They said it appeared to be like 7 to 8 feet tall, 300 to 350 pounds, which is 3.3 to 3.9 12-year-old boys.
I don't understand how people are like guesstimating random creature weights. From a distance, by the way. Like, I've never been like, it looked like it weighed about 300 pounds. I have no fucking clue how much anything weighs.
No, no, that's weird. But maybe, you know what? Maybe, like, farmers would be better at that because of their animals. Like, they can kind of guesstimate the animal weight.
I'm not sure whether this was a rural neighborhood where people were farming and would have a better idea, but it just feels strange to me.
That's fair. That's fair. So, the creature was pale, dirty white, or cream-colored in its fur. It was standing on 2 feet, and Randy started to walk towards the creature and got like 30 to 40 feet away from it. And then that's when Randy began to smell the musky odor coming from it.
Hard pass. Don't lick a cryptid smell.
No, no.
So officers investigated the area where Randy and Cheryl had seen the creature, and they found weeds that had been broken down, which indicated that something had walked through that area. MPD called Jerry Nellis to request that he bring his dog to the area to track the creature. So this dog had a very long resume. It was a German Shepherd, and he was trained to search buildings. He could track shit. And then he also was an attack dog. So he could do everything.
Swiss Army knife of a dog.
For sure. And his name was Rab. Rab's my favorite character of all of this so far.
Yep.
Rab began to track the creature going in the direction that Cheryl and Randy had said that it had gone. As Rab tracked the creature, there was a slime-like substance that was on the weeds that were impacted by its walking path. So like as it was walking, it was like sliming things.
They're saying it's covered in mud. And I'm like, is it mud or is it slime? I need you to fucking pick one. Pick a substance.
Is this like Ghostbusters slime?
I also thought of like a snail trail, but on feet.
Okay. Ew. I hate that.
I don't like that either, though. I hate it as well.
So Rab also smelled the slime. And Jerry, the dog's owner, touched the slime and rubbed it between his fingers.
I just certainly wouldn't have done that.
No, no. I won't even touch, like, children's slime. I hate it.
Yeah, fair.
I hate it.
Jerry was like, I'm gonna put it between my fingers and feel about it.
I hate it so much. It makes me really uncomfortable. Especially, like, it's not even children's slime. It's just, like, random slime in the wild.
The idea of finding wild slime and giving it one of these with your fingers, I cannot handle it. But I also hated that when I read it, I knew the motion he was talking about. Like substance between your fingers. I was like, Jerry, no.
No, Jerry, please.
No, Jerry, no.
They continued into the woods, then to a pond, then around the pond. And Rab tried to follow the smell down a steep embankment, but it was just too bushy and too thick to walk through.
So Rab was then pulled off of trying to track it because that was not a place that anybody could walk safely. And in the report, they say he was pulled off the tract, which we think it means that he was pulled off of the path he was previously tracking. They continued to search other areas to see if Rab would pick up the scent in a different area. He started to kind of lead them to an abandoned barn, but he refused to go in. And Jerry was like, that is not like him at all. He's actually never refused to go into a building before. So Jerry and Officer Nash search the barn, but don't find anything. And then they take Rab home, and presumably he was given so many treats because he did such a good job. And he
for sure
tracked all the slime and all the monsters.
Yeah, they gave him a steak.
I hope so. He earned it. So during this search, they also interviewed one of the neighbors, and his name was David Barrel. He mentioned to the MPD that about 10 minutes before Cheryl and Randy had reported seeing the creature, his son had come in and told him that there was a, quote, large ghost in their backyard. This didn't concern Dave at all until he was like, oh, Cheryl and Randy saw something. And I just feel like we aren't talking enough about like apparition sizes. Like how big is a big ghost? Because I've never thought to consider like a ghost big or small. You're either human ghost sized or not.
That's fair. I saw a meme this week that said like, hey, Dad, do animals come back as ghosts or do their spirits remain? And he's like, yeah, probably. And he's like, so how many spiders are in the house?
Oh, shit. I do not like that one fucking bit, but those would be small ghosts.
Yeah. Yeah, that would be a small ghost.
We have like white spiders in our house. I know that they're not spider ghosts, but I will be calling them spider ghosts from now on.
Oh, my gosh. I think you should name them and just take over whatever they actually are.
Spider ghosts. Yeah, that's what they are. Yeah.
And now they're spider ghosts.
That's much more whimsical. And I like that more.
Yeah, I think that's fair. So let's move on to another police report. On July 7th of 1973, there was a sighting at Riverside Park. And the complainant here was Bert Miller, who was the owner of the Miller Carnival. He said four of his workers saw a creature near the carnival the previous morning. He took a while to report that.
Mm-hmm.
The carnival workers were Otis Norris, Ray Adkerson, Wesley Lavender, and Charles Kimball. So he didn't report it sooner because he didn't want to scare off potential customers.
Classic carnival owner.
If there's things happening, perhaps you don't want your customers to be in danger if it's something crazy. But, you know, anything for the carnival. So let's talk about the account. At 2 a.m. on July 7th of 1973, the ponies were making noise and trying to break loose. Poor ponies.
They were tied to a tree that was behind the carnival trucks. And the workers came out to the truck to check on the ponies, and that's when they saw the creature. Now let's talk about the description of this thing. It was 7 to 8 feet tall, brown hair covering its body. It was standing upright on two legs, and again, it was 300 to 400 pounds. The creature was standing close to the ponies, and it seemed curious, but it wasn't moving towards them.
I just love the idea of being like, what is this? Like, what are you?
What are this?
Yeah.
They ran to Bert's trailer to tell him about it. And then when they all came back, the creature was gone. Once they came back, though, the creature was gone. Then around 3 a.m., Charles was by himself when he saw the creature reappear near the ponies. It just loves ponies. Just
loves a fucking pony.
I mean, that was us, though.
He's like, these are my little ponies, is what he said.
That was us when we were at Vulture, though. Like, yeah,
they're cute.
We would just get off track to go look at the ponies or the goats. But again, the creature was like really into these ponies. So Charles went to the owner's trailer again. And when he came back with Charles, the creature was gone again. There were no footprints, though, found at the scene of this area.
So we mentioned Westwood Lane earlier, and we're going to fast forward to 1976, June 19th. And it's almost 3 years to the day. We're just like about a week off from 3 years from that sighting. So now we're at 25 Westwood Lane. And Mrs. Ray Kells called the MPD because her son and two of his friends had seen a large creature. And the boys' names were Ricky Kells, who was 10, David Taylor, who was 11, and Russell Ward, who was 13. By the time Officers Nash and Schultz reached the scene, the parents of David and Russell were also there because they all like lived right near each other. The boys had seen the creature behind the Kells family home, standing near the woods. The parents originally were like a little hesitant to call the MPD. But the way that the kids had acted really did convince them that they had seen something. And we'll talk about that in just a moment. So they showed the officers where the boys had seen the creature, and the officers again couldn't find any tracks. However, about 100 yards into the woods, there was an area where several large rocks had been turned over.
Oh.
Which I've got a lot of questions.
Yeah.
How is this related? What makes a rock large? How do you know when it was turned over? Presumably there's an indentation.
The Blair Witch.
The Blair Witch, obviously. So the three boys' accounts on what happened are pretty similar, so we're going to sum them up all together. Ricky, David, and Russell were playing wiffle ball when a ball was accidentally hit between two of the houses. Ricky was walking down the hill to get the ball when he saw the creature standing next to the woods, completely still. So Ricky yells for the other two boys and was like, look over there. When the boys look over there, they do see the creature as well. And then they all run the fuck home and tell their parents what happened.
Yeah.
As they ran home, Ricky said that he saw it go back into the woods and he heard a loud thumping as it walked. And the other two boys reported hearing that same loud thumping.
I don't like that.
They described it as 7 to 8 feet tall, gray in color, covered in hair. And we've got a new variable in the mix, large ears. This sounds like a fucking bunny to me, doesn't it?
It's the Easter bunny.
It's like the Donnie Darko bunny.
Oh, no.
Even scarier. I know.
All right. That's something.
Yeah. And I would imagine that there is just a difference in your kids running up to you and like laughing and playing around versus your kids terrified running towards you. And that's probably what made the parents be like, okay, we're actually going to take this seriously because they were genuinely scared.
Yeah. So let's talk about the last police report. And that happened on June 27th of 1976, and it was for 149 West and Mifflin Road. So Merle Mifflin said that he saw the big muddy monster near his home. His kids were Michael and Melinda Mifflin, and Merle and his children and one of those kids' friends, Karen Gruber, all I thought was Gibbler, but they said that they saw the big muddy monster around their home. The kids were playing outside when they saw the large animal walking through a small wooded area. The family dog had been outside with them and started barking and would not enter the wooded area. And this wasn't typical for this particular dog. The officers who came to the scene were Officers Eovaldi and Officer Nash. Poor Officer Nash.
He was on all of these. But also, we're going to talk in a minute why it's possible that there's a lot of repeats on the officers here, too. When we think about just the size of the MPD, why you may have seen that there was one particular guy on all the calls at night.
That's fair. I just feel bad for him.
I feel glad for him. He got a whole experience. He's out looking for something.
So the officers and Merle looked around the area but didn't find anything indicating a large animal had been there.
The reports that they got from the kids varied significantly.
I love this.
And let's start with Michael's account. He said that the creature was black and furry. It was 6 feet tall and it weighed 5 to 6 tons.
That's big. That is very big.
He saw the creature along the creek bank around 9 in the morning on June 26th. Now, Melinda's account is a little bit different. She said that they were playing near the swing when she saw something walking through the woods. Not much. She was small with her words there.
Yeah, very, very cutesy and demure.
She was like, there was a thing there. What do you want? Mm-hmm. Now, Karen, her account, she said that her and the other two kids were playing on the swing when they heard something walking through the woods. The dog started barking, and then she saw something that was, quote, real tall, fat, and big, walking around the woods. This happened around 8:45 at night.
So a little bit of a difference there.
Yeah. It's pretty clear that the police took the reports seriously. And Police Chief Toby Berger, sometimes spelled like burger, like the burger you eat, also hunted for the creature outside of when there was immediate reports. So the entirety of the 14-person police force assisted in the search for this creature. And they also had a team of dogs as well. They were dedicated.
So one of the things that they also include in the case files is all of the letters that were written to Police Chief Berger, a lot of which were from children from schools, which were really cute. They were like, can you please tell us more? Like, over and over and over again. Some people were like, here's my theories, but none of them really made any sense.
That's fair.
The story of this cryptid was reported on all over the United States. The New York Times even wrote about him. There weren't any sightings for over a decade after 1976. And the next one was in 1988, when a salvage yard owner, along with one of his employees and his wife, as well as his mother, saw something in the salvage yard. Apparently, it was terrorizing them. What they said had happened was they see this creature, and then the owner and his employee are like, we should shoot it, because that's what people do when they see a cryptid. And it gets mad, so it attacks them. And so what they did was they ran to the office space, which happened to be like a metal structure, and the creature banged on the exterior of the walls for over a half hour before it left. That would scare the fuck out of me too. But also a human doing that would also be scary. Anything banging on the walls for an hour.
But also don't try to shoot everything.
Yeah, stop trying to shoot cryptids. It feels reasonable.
Yeah.
And the theories for what the big money monster are pretty vague. He was a creature that came from the river, a government cover-up of some sort, perhaps a Bigfoot relative, a prank, or a big muddy bear. None of them make any sense, but I don't know. So,
with long ears or big ears.
Yeah, with big ears. In 2018, a local artist named Bruce Klein worked with Timothy Mayer, and they created the Big Muddy Monster comic book that had some of the sightings in it. There's a mural all over Murfreesboro, and there's even a festival. The one for this year is June 20th.
I love that.
So, a fun time. I love a cryptid festival.
Yeah. So, what do you think? What was it?
So, the first one, I think that people saw debris in the water and they, like, mistook it, and or they saw perhaps a large alligator snapping turtle and misjudged the size of it.
Okay. And that's for the Beast of Busco.
For the Beast of Busco, yes. Mm-hmm. And then for the Big Bunny Monster, it sounds like a Bigfoot of some sort.
Okay. It changes colors, though. Did it have like a litter of baby Bigfoots?
Ooh, like maybe they're just like a little family.
Yeah.
I actually think it's just a trick of the lighting. I think that if you're looking at something in a certain light, like shiny fur can look lighter, especially if it's like wet. I think it's just the lighting. That's my guess.
Especially if it was in the morning or at dusk. I think you're right about just like the big snapping turtle. And maybe it just like looked giant, but like there are some pretty big turtles out there.
Yeah.
I don't think it was as big as a Volkswagen Beagle, but I do think that it was just like a big snapping turtle.
Yeah.
Now, for this last one, I think it could be trick of light. I think you're right on that. Like, especially at the tree line, because you know that they're not very close to it. Yeah. I don't know how to explain the slime, though.
Yeah, I don't like that slime. I don't like that.
The slime is weird. Yeah.
And I think that if there was a modern sighting, they would absolutely test that slime to see what that was. And I'd be really curious as to what that is.
I don't know. They didn't really care when it rained slime.
You're right.
But we want to know what you think, too. So check us out on social media. Mm-hmm. Let us know what you think. Head to our Discord if you're a Patreon. Also, I do want to know, have any of you been to cryptid festivals? Like, which one was your favorite? What was super fun?
Yeah, they are really fun. I went to the Mothman Festival, and I've also been to the Squonkapalooza.
I just love the name of that one.
Oh, yeah, Squonkapalooza. I also had one of the cutest little coffee drinks there. It was like a mocha, and it had like a gummy pig on it, because the squonk looks kind of like a pig. And it was just like the cutest fucking thing I'd ever seen in my life. Amanda mentioned our Discord a second ago, but that is one of the perks if you are our Patreons. And just, you know, as always, a quick thank you to our Patreons, because that's how we're able to do this show. Because websites and podcast hosting and equipment and all the things is quite expensive. And so we really, really appreciate it.
And ongoing.
Yeah, we have to pay yearly. And as we just got all our finances together for the year, we were like, we're so thankful. We are so, so thankful.
Yeah.
Take a look at the link in the show notes. We have tiers starting at $1 and they move up. We also just like recently did an extra little ad hoc perk. We got an episode finished early, so we did an early release for Patreons only, so they were able to listen to the episode sooner.
Yeah.
And also, if you're like, I can't do that right now, but you still would like to support the show, we would really, really appreciate it if you left us a review. And if you do that, if you send us a screenshot of it and your mailing address, we'll send you a sticker.
Yeah, we have some really cute stickers, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're a little partial.
And this year's Patreon sticker is really fun, too. Just saying.
It's one of my favorites. It is. I say that every year, I think, because I'm always very excited about them.
And when we first ordered them this year, they sent us something wildly different. It was hilarious. I should just send those out, too. Here you go.
Yeah.
I don't know who this is, but yeah. Good luck.
Perfect.
Well, with that, have a great weekend.
Thanks for creeping with us. Thanks for listening. And as always, a special thank you to our patrons who support us via Patreon.
Please see the link in our show notes to learn more about how you, yes you, can begin to haunt the dump, guard vortexes, or even become a scorching Sasquatch.
Ooh. Also in our show notes, you can find the link to our website, more information on our sources, our social media handles, and our merch store.
We'd love for you to keep creeping with us. So if you like this episode, please subscribe, rate, review, and share the show with your fellow creeps and or ghosts.
I beg of you.
I don't like lakes. Off topic again. Just a random video. Did you see? I need to look it up. I'll send it to you. Historically, there was a dog that was given steak, I want to say, mm-hmm. for saving a child from a lake.
As it should.
And it was stoked about it, right? Everyone loved this dog. Well, now when children were playing around the lake, the dog was pushing them in so he could save them to get steak.
Very trainable. Very smart. I mean, I don't condone it, but I do like that he was like, if children are in the lake, I get a steak. You do what you gotta do to get a steak around these parts.
I loved it. I cackled. It was so funny.
That is funny.
Mine, I definitely think, wants to bite me as well. And it is not a snapping turtle.
Yet.
Yet. He wants to.
It's like, give me a chance.
He wants to be a snapping turtle.
Yeah. Yeah. Just let me be who I want to be. I crave flesh. That's what he says.
He really does.
Oh, no.
He tries to draw you in because he wants to bite you.
But not yet. Hasn't gotten a chance.
Not yet.
Okay.
Not yet. I'm careful.
In my head, it was a Volkswagen Beagle. Beagle, by the way.
Beagle. Wow. See, but middle schools vary. Some in Arizona do 4 grades instead of just 2.
Well, that so, is wrong. And I think that's called junior high, isn't it? Isn't that the difference? I broke
it. Isn't that the same thing?
It is, but I think that maybe that's what it should be. That if it's got 4 grades, it's a junior high. And if it's got 3, it's a middle school.
I don't know. It was called middle school. We did 4 grades. It was weird.
Did you go higher or lower?
Lower.
Okay, that makes more sense. Okay.
Maybe it was 3 grades. It was something.
Middle school is a bad time and we all block it out. If you've had a good time in middle school, then congratulations.
You're weird.
So special. The rest of us were awkward and weird.
I do have a police turtle tortoise story.
Okay. I'm intrigued.
When we moved into our neighborhood, we were only one block. Like, there wasn't many people here yet. It was a new build. Well, I was like, I should go to the first HOA meeting. Like, I just feel like that's what I should do to see like how this works, right? And they called the police in, the HOA people called the police in to speak to the neighbors to say, please stop calling 911 for things. You do not need to call 911 when, you know, someone is hanging out on, we have like a decorative bridge thing. You don't need to call 911 for this, that, just like nonsense, right? As we're walking out of the HOA meeting, the police is like, one of the officers is just standing by the door so like people can ask him questions. And I kid you not, this woman goes up to the officer
and is like, I've only called 911 once, but it's because there was a big turtle in the road and I didn't know what to do.
You know what, though? I support that. She's like, I can't get this turtle out of the road and I don't want it to get hurt. So, like, what do I do?
But I'm just saying, it's common even today. People will call the police to help with turtle problems.
Turtle problems are real problems.
I was like, just call me. I'll go get it. Mm-hmm. It's fine. He just loved turtles. He had a turtle carnival.
Yeah. Hell yeah. So long as they're ethically treated. Like, it's only turtles that have been rescued. Yeah, no.
Like, rescue turtles.
Yeah, the colonel. The colonel turtle.
From the road. The
colonel turtle. Carnival.
911 just collects them now so that they could do the turtle carnival. Interesting.
You know how I feel about lakes.
I do. Especially if you know that there's creatures in that body of water. Amanda does not do it. She's not fucking having it.
I did it. It just took a lot.
She did it, but begrudgingly. Also, yeah. I need you to know that when you began the phrase to sex a turtle, I took it as like, not like to determine its sex. I thought you meant like, I wanna sex you up. And I was like, to seduce a turtle?
You're weird.
And I was like, Amanda, how do you know how to seduce a turtle?
No. To tell if it's male or female, weirdo.
Obviously. God.
Do you remember when Ollie was little and you guys came and I was like, we're a slime-free household? And Ben was like, Ollie wants slime, though. And then he's like, I see. Or kinetic sand and slime. Oh, no,
it was kinetic sand.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, somebody else bought it for him. We were just playing it. And Ollie was like, what if I took this and I found every single line in this table and just rubbed neon blue sand into it? And that was the moment that I was like, I will never bequeath this curse upon my sister-in-law and brother, because like, it is both fun to play with and an absolute nightmare.
No, you got that giant Ryan egg that had slime in it. Oh my god,
you're right. No, the sand.
And I was like, well, there's both.
Was there both?
I think I said we were a slime-free household. I was like, kinetic sand, he already has it, but it will never reappear.
Oh, I see.
And then he was like, oh, I see it.
This is already going to be at the end of the episode. So
for sure.
I do need to just ask you, have you seen those TikTok videos where, I feel like it's always women that I see doing it, where they're like, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to make slime on my floor. And they just start pouring like Elmer's glue on their floor and then mixing a bunch of shit. And it's like, they create slime. I think like, I can only imagine that they're fetish videos, because I can't imagine doing that otherwise, because like, I've got pets, right? So that would have like cat hair in it, like a leaf from outside, like dog hair. I'm like, I wouldn't want, I'm hitting my mic, but like this, and the sound it makes, I can hear it in my head. And I'm like, why are you doing this?
Someone got him a kit a while back, like years back. Was make your own glitter slime.
Why?
So they didn't have to do that. Who they hates
don't like
me?
You. They don't like you. That's why. You're like, that's an act of aggression.
It is. It truly is. Yeah.
Just say you want to fight me. Just be clearer, you know?
Like, I'd rather get in a fist fight than have to clean up slime.
Well, that's not how Jerry felt.
No, Jerry was really into it.
Jerry, no.
No, Jerry, please.
No, Jerry, no.